Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Peter Fontaine, who's the co-chair of the Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies Energy, Environmental and Public Utilities Practice Group and the Climate Change Practice. He previously served as an enforcement lawyer with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, where he helped write regulations implementing the 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act, prosecuted civil violations of environmental laws, and was a special assistant to the Director of Civil Enforcement. Welcome to Background Briefing, Peter Fontaine.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be here.
And from the position of somebody that's worked inside the EPA, what are the consequences inside the agency itself of Donald Trump basically eviscerating the centerpiece of Obama's environmental legacy? This is really, I mean, my understanding from all the time I've talked to scientists about global warming and climate change is they more or less say, well, you know, so far it's been too little too late, and here we are making an absolutely about turn and heading in the back in the wrong direction. So what's your understanding from inside the EPA? Are people aware that this is something that the planet can't afford?
Yes, I think that the good and loyal scientists and public servants at EPA are probably more aware of the catastrophic consequences of doing nothing than just about anybody. I think that this White House executive order was obviously widely anticipated based upon the statements that the president-elect had made, and so I think agency employees have been preparing for this day. I would say that, you know, the underpinning of the executive order is somehow this notion that you can, with a stroke of a pen, make climate change and the effects of climate change and the economic and public health and environmental impacts of climate change go away with a stroke of a pen. And that's really not the case. In effect, I would say that the rest of the world is moving forward on this issue and treating it with the appropriate level of seriousness. And if the United States goes backward on this issue, it risks not only losing a technological lead against certain economic competitors of ours, such as China, but also the moral authority that the United States has had on this issue, certainly over the last 8 years, in terms of leading the effort to try to get a climate change global program in place that would allow for the most economically efficient ways of going about addressing the problem. And with this executive order, it obviously seriously impacts our ability to do that.
But this is like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, it seems. When Trump signed this today, he was surrounded by coal miners. And you know he's promised the coal states that helped elect him, Ohio, Kentucky, etc., that he would bring back coal and stop the so-called war on coal and how much he loves coal miners, which he again said today. But their jobs aren't going to come back. He can't wag a magic wand. The market forces are taking their jobs away, not Obama's environmental plans.
That's absolutely correct, Ian. You know, we have, in many ways, we are blessed with an abundance of indigenous sources of energy, such as natural gas, which although it's a fossil fuel, it does have a much less significant impact on climate change. Natural gas is cleaning the clock of coal because it is so plentiful, it's abundant, it's low cost, and it's much cleaner. And so the markets are already they've already written the obituary for coal in the United States. It is certainly very unfortunate that there are many people that are dislocated by those market changes. But those market changes are going to occur regardless of whether, you know, we essentially rewrite the Clean Power Plan and stop regulating, you know, methane emissions from oil and gas production and things like that. The bottom line is the market is taking care of this. And unfortunately, the president's view on this is really misplaced. Now, really, the solution to this, in my view, is that the United States really ought to take what should be viewed as the conservatives' preferred approach. If you accept the science of climate change, and certainly, you know, the last 100 years of research and analysis and the laws of physics would support a conclusion that fossil fuel emissions are resulting in very significant changes to our climate, then really the solution here is to have a broad-based tax on carbon that is done in a way that can avoid disparate impacts and generate revenue to help to ameliorate the impacts on places like Appalachia, where you have a lot of dislocated people from the massive change in the coal market, and also have a much more efficient way to go about reducing emissions of carbon pollutants, such as carbon dioxide and methane and things like that. It would give the country a much more rational and economically efficient way to start to move toward a lower carbon economy without, you know, having the massive dislocation that would be created by, you know, completely trying to go to a zero carbon system. That is really not realistic at this point in time. There is a pathway to get there, but we ought to be doing this in a much more rational way, and a carbon tax would be the way to do that.
But can you drive a wedge between the coal lobby and the oil and gas lobby? I mean, it's clear that Trump is pandering to the fossil fuel lobby, but I would have thought that, as I mentioned earlier, that throwing the baby out with the bathwater doesn't make any sense, because you basically, you know, told fibs on the campaign trail to get the votes of the miners, and you're essentially conning them because you can't do anything about this industry that's dying. Is there any way to, you know, I mean, the American Petroleum Institute's more or less saying that they're going along with this, but surely they've got to take a stand in the sense that we've got to be serious about global warming. And
yes, I mean, I think that there are many people in the industry that recognize that carbon emissions are causing, you know, slow but inexorable catastrophic changes on our climate and the way it interacts with people in the environment. There are many people that do accept the science. I mean, the science, I believe, is pretty much irrefutable. You know, there may be disagreements over, you know, at the margin of how quickly certain things are going to occur and whether or not you're going to have certain feedback loops that, you know, accelerate the impacts. But really, I think that if the industry would get behind the notion that we need to do something about it, and that a tax on carbon emissions that is well thought out, you know, that applies across the entire economy, and that could serve as a basis for a global program that would, you know, create incentives for reductions, that would really be the most effective and the best option to move forward. And if the industry would get behind that, I believe that you actually could, you know, create the necessary momentum to do something. And really, that, as I said before, that really ought to be the conservatives' approach. I mean, you have here probably the worst market failure that one has ever seen with regard to climate change and the impacts associated with it. The fact is that we have an inability to let, you know, to allow the market to deal with this situation, because there is asymmetric information and an inability to internalize those costs. And so really, that would be the best option for moving forward on it. And to get back to your question about can you put a wedge between the coal industry and the rest of the fossil fuel industry, I think that there are very good reasons to not throw coal a lifeline. I think that, you know, the coal industry is in decline, and it will continue to do so. But really, what we ought to be doing is creating other opportunities for people who historically worked in that industry, and we ought to find ways to lessen that impact, job training and other programs, rather than trying to resuscitate an industry that is, you know, that is going to die regardless.
But while Donald Trump is making false promises to the coal miners, he's also giving a blank check to oil and gas with the Keystone XL pipeline and other goodies that he's throwing their way. So is there any incentive on their part to get serious about global warming?
Well, I think, you know, there won't be an incentive until we have an honest discussion and debate at the congressional level, and we have two political parties that both recognize that there's a problem here. And unfortunately, at the present time, we have one party that is, you know, basically denying the science behind this phenomenon, and they hold a majority in both houses as well as the White House. And so the ability to get anything done until there's an honest discussion on the science and what the best solution is, I'm very pessimistic. But I'm hopeful that with a continuing emphasis on the effects of this issue and the impacts, and I'm also hopeful with, you know, a younger generation that is acutely concerned about this situation and is very concerned about the lack of progress, that eventually we will break through and eventually we will have, you know, meaningful action in the Congress.
Well, Peter Fontaine, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Peter Fontaine, who's the co-chair of the Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies Energy, Environmental and Public Utilities Practice Group and the Climate Change Practice. He previously served as an enforcement lawyer with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, where he helped write regulations implementing the 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act, prosecuted civil violations of environmental laws, and was a special assistant to the Director of Civil Enforcement. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.